Hi, I'm Danielle Kading, and you're listening to special election coverage on Wisconsin Public Radio. In this hour, we're bringing you interviews with candidates running for the 7th Congressional District seat and the 74th District for State Assembly. In the last hour, we heard a debate between Republican Congressman Sean Duffy and Democrat Margaret Engebretson. Up next, we hear from a third-party candidate running for the 7th Congressional District seat in northern Wisconsin. Ken Dreesen of Hayward is a direct participatory democracy candidate. Dreesen sat down with us recently in our WPR studios to talk about why he's running.
And how I got started in politics was back when I was a union steward in the 90s, and I thought about what was really going on. And in my mind, I thought, I don't even have 1/300 millionth of a vote here because there's so much money involved in politics, and so that it's all bought. And that was before Citizens United versus the Federal Elections Commission. And so it's gotten worse rather than better, this situation of we don't really have a say. And then I thought, what do you do? Like, yes, I am only 1/300 millionth. So how do we organize, or how can the majority have a say? And it's quite complicated, too, because some people say the majority is like tyranny of the majority, and it could make minorities nervous and stuff. And I think that is just something that the people in power use, because like Trump says, the mob rule, he calls democracy mob rule. So in reality, I believe no matter, there's an interracial humanist kind of movement going on. And so I trust the majority. And that's where I'm probably a little different than all the other candidates, because I feel that the majority should have a say, and the majority knows the issues that they care about and are more caring than either the Democrats or Republicans.
Okay. So then what are some of the top priorities that you're running on?
Well, the first is this direct participatory democracy, because I believe that everybody should have a say in what's going on. And the only way to give them the say is to give them an actual vote on a legislation before the Congress. And we could never do that before. We could never have a true democracy or even a valid constitutional republic, because we didn't really have the technology. And, you know, that's how the Electoral College and stuff came into it, because, you know, there was the days of Pony Express and stuff, where now with the internet and with a very reliable mail service for people that do not like communicating on the internet and computers, I could send them a ballot once a month that will have most of the bigger issues and the bigger legislation that's coming before Congress. And through the internet, they can vote on their cell phones, and the system could work. And the state of Wisconsin has a website. It's the Wisconsin Elections Commission, and they have the information on every registered voter so that you could enter your first and your last name and your birth date of yourself or anybody on this website, and you can find out where they're registered, what their address is, and what their zip code is, so you can identify them as somebody that would be eligible to vote in a direct participatory democracy system.
So you believe that basically every voter should have equal say in legislation or things that come before Congress?
Yeah, it's yes, I do, and I have for a long time, and I think that does have benefits, even from, like, I'm more of a liberal kind of I like a lot of the stuff that Bernie Sanders presented to us, because we have an economy that's more it's so the manufacturing process is such that we need less and less people, and computers do the same thing, so then we need to get people involved into the system. And I believe that the majority of us are more caring and loving, and we have respect for other races and other religious and ethnic groups of people. It may be a small majority, but I do believe the majority are good and hardworking and caring, and we need a voice, and I believe that would run our country better than egotistical people that believe that they somehow can vote for the 720-some thousand people in the district and that somehow their decision would be correct.
So government closer to the people.
Yeah. Somehow people have to have a valid way of being involved with their government.
Okay. Well, I wanted to ask you about some of your take on the issues compared to the other candidates, Congressman Sean Duffy, the Republican incumbent, and Democrat Margaret Engebretson, who's the Balsam Lake attorney running in this race. And they have differing views on health care. I believe Sean Duffy has said that he prefers a free market approach to health care because right now he feels the system is disrupted. Margaret Engebretson says she supports Medicare for all, a single-payer type approach. What kind of healthcare model do you support?
Well, I definitely agree with Margaret, and I've met both Sean and Margaret at different times in the last few years. And a universal national healthcare system based on Medicaid or Medicare that includes everyone, and you would increase Social Security and Medicare taxes a little bit, then also some of these tax breaks that were given to the extremely wealthy, we're going to have to turn some of that around because what they're doing with that money, they're banking overseas and doing all kind of very corrupt things because when your only moral standard is to profit, it's not good for our country or anything for humanity. So back to the health care. Like I said, I agree with Margaret, and we need something like that because it is kind of an economic warfare with the mechanized production of things and stuff. There is less need for people to do the manual labor that we used to do, and using that and increasing population in likely Republican idea is they're kind of like against birth control and abortion and things like that. And to have more people when we need less people, it's running into real problems for our society.
Okay. Well, and I wanted to ask you about trade as well, because Sean Duffy has said that he supports what President Donald Trump is doing with trade, that he feels that he's negotiating the best deal for Americans. While Margaret Engebretson has said that tariffs are hurting people in northern Wisconsin, like farmers in other parts of the district. So what's your stance on trade and tariffs?
Well, I would be against tariffs, and I think we have to be able to compete internationally with trade, and the way to do that would be to help people with the national health care. It would help. Even the Koch brothers said that a universal health care system would save money. So therefore, if you take the private insurance equation out of our health care, then you can do business and compete with the prices the way they are rather than try and start a trade war. And the same thing goes with education. I believe that we could have a K through 16 education, publicly funded education, where some people would go to trade school, some people would go to college and get some at least a start in their college degree that's paid for publicly. And through that, to have a more educated workforce and a healthy workforce, and then businesses would not have to pay for some of those things that they're paying for now, that we could compete without having a trade war.
Okay. And what about taxes? You know, Sean Duffy has supported tax reforms and says that there's been a tax cut for everyone. And that, you know, what we've seen with the corporate tax rate, that'll take longer to come back around to benefit people, to have corporations reinvest as a result of that. While Margaret Engebretson says it was a corporate giveaway. So what's your stance on tax reforms, or what we've done or what we need to do?
Well, this whole Trump and Republican, it's like a reverse Robin Hood, this tax giveaway. They're almost rewarding people for banking overseas and to taking all industry overseas. And it's like a trickle-down thing that was tried in the Reagan times. And we don't need that. That's not going to help actual workers. And actually, the Republicans and Trump are busting unions. And union is an international right. To unionize and collective bargaining is recognized by the United Nations as an international right. And our First Amendment includes, like, the right of association with others and stuff. And so then if a majority of the people on a job site want a union, they're trying to bust their right. And they're not really helping the workers. So one thing that I disagree with both of them on, and something that I've thought up, is that we have this Federal Reserve system, and the Federal Reserve is associated with the Bank for International Settlements in Switzerland. And so then, rather than a constitutional monetary system where the Congress is in charge of printing the money, we have a system of debt to the same international bankers that have been running the world for a long time. And a debt-based monetary system could be replaced by a value-based system similar to what Lincoln and the Congress ran during the Civil War, which in a fate money system like it is now, I think that would work better than turning back to the gold standard or anything like that. So therefore, when the government does stuff in order to keep our society stable and to have a civil society, then the work that somebody does for the system, that gives the value to the money rather than borrowing money from the international bankers. And neither of those candidates have confronted or thought of deep issues in the economy and what it's really based on.
Well, what about your take on issues like natural resources, the environment, and climate change? Where do you stand on, you know, policies towards that? We've seen President Donald Trump pull out of the Paris Climate Accords and roll back Obama-era regulations or attempt to do that. So where do you stand on issues related to that?
I'm definitely concerned about our environment, and I think most scientists agree that global warming does have a relationship to our fossil fuel burning and stuff like that. But I don't think that the progressives go far enough and think about it far enough in order to really deal with these things. One of them is population, and a growing population needs more resources and gives less resources per person. And then they're trying to go after the source of fossil fuel. Progressives are that care about the environment, and going after the source is never going to help. I've been around in this district, and when I went and got my nomination signatures, I saw housing that was really quite substandard and stuff, technology that's in the 50s, and actually houses built in the 50s and 60s with single-pane windows and stuff like that. So then even where I live, we burn probably 2 500-gallon tanks of propane a year. And so then in order to lessen our use of fossil fuel, we have to do things like insulate and make our houses and our cars more efficient, because nobody's going to go with just stopping, you know, capping wells and not having this fossil fuel, because our society depends on energy and depends on our creature comforts and our quality and of life, our lifestyles. And it's going to take some more thoughts and more actual actions to keep our level of life going and use less fossil fuels.
I meant to ask you straight off about the economy and jobs. You know, Congressman Sean Duffy has said that all of the things that President Donald Trump is doing is helping the economy right now. And I think Democrats are arguing that that was something that was set in motion under President Obama. I guess, what's your take on the economy and jobs, and what would you do if elected as congressman to support the economy and jobs in northern Wisconsin?
Well, I think this idea of where the money comes from and what our priorities are with the economy are complicated, and then some of the statistics and stuff and some of what they say are statistics aren't really valid as far as the working class people coming off any better under Trump's policies. I don't believe that. I believe you can fudge the statistics and stuff like unemployment and employment, that not that many people went back to work, and the industrial jobs and manufacturing jobs are not returning that fast. And even if they did, compared to what we value in life, like free time and education and communication and helping people to understand reality rather than saying that mob rule, Democrats are mob rule and stuff like that. And I think that both what Sean Duffy and Trump are doing, that's hierarchical, to just to make billionaires richer and things like that. And I don't think that's good for the average lives of our citizens, of our citizenry.
Well, the last issue I wanted to ask you about is military spending and national security. I guess, you know, we've seen a growing part of the national budget go toward defense, whether at home or abroad. And I understand that you're a peace activist. So what would be your take on military spending and national security?
Well, I would say that if you want to increase in spending to military and justify that, you have to increase diplomacy and increase talking with other nations. And I believe even, you know, the people in China and the people in Russia and people in Europe, the actual working class people, aren't that much different than people in the United States. And we really don't want war. We don't want to see war. And it's just sad. The only people, the military-industrial complex, and I call them monetary system monopolizing, weapons dealing, war profiteerings, they're the only ones that are going to gain from any of this. And so that would probably be my idea, is if you can't justify increase with war without increased working towards peace. And sometimes the leaders, a lot of them, like, I don't really trust Putin that much. They're building up their military also, and they say that they kind of violated some of the nuclear arms treaties, but so have we. So instead of just getting rid of the treaty, why don't we work with the treaty and work with them? And then I believe with the internet and stuff, we can actually gain supporters, the Russian people and the Chinese people, the populace of the planet should have a say. And from meeting people from different countries, nobody really likes war. No, other than a few, I don't know, sociopaths, narcissists, or whatever you want to call these people that think that they can make business deals and with a holding weapons to people's heads in order to make deals. I think it's terrible. It's inhuman. It's actually war crimes. The United States has been involved in war crimes for a long time, and against South America and against the Muslim people. And it's very sad. I don't really like almost being American in a way because of that. But at the other time, like, I'm proud of the workers and my people and where I live. but ashamed of the war machine. It's a crime.
Again, you've been listening to Ken Dreesen of Hayward. He's running as a direct participatory democracy candidate in the 7th Congressional District race. You can hear this interview again online at wpr.org/superior. We're going to take a short break for these announcements. I'm Danielle Kading, and you're listening to special election coverage on Wisconsin Public Radio.
Welcome to People of Color on Wisconsin Public Radio. This is Henry Banks. I'm here today with Haji Dokanchi. He is a political science professor. I am here with Sheila Lamb. She is the executive director of All Nations Indigenous Center. I'm on the phone today with Ramadan Washington. He is a community activist. I'm honored to have Stefan Witherspoon here. Stefan is president-elect.
People of Color with Henry Banks, Thursdays at 6 p.m. on 91.3.
Support also comes from the Ashland Area Chamber, featuring 27 murals on the Ashland County Mural Brick Road, from Madeline Island in the north to Butternut in the south. Maps and info are at travelashlandcounty.com.
WPR is proud to support Choir Fest on November 9th at the Thorpe Langley Auditorium. UWS will host singers from throughout Wisconsin and Minnesota. This year will commemorate the 100th anniversary of November 11th, 1918. The end of World War I. The choir and orchestra will perform excerpts from Franz Josef Haydn, Z. Randall Stroop, and Johann Sebastian Bach. The concert starts at 7 p.m. Info at uwsuper.edu/archive.
WPR is pleased to support the Big Water Film Festival, showing over 40 independent films November 7th to the 10th with screenings in Bayfield, Drummond, Washburn, and Ashland. The festival has something for everyone. Documentaries, features, shorts, animation from filmmakers close to home and around the globe. A complete listing of films and schedules is online at bigwaterfilmfestival.org.
Hi, I'm Danielle Kading, and you're listening to special election coverage on Wisconsin Public Radio. Up next, we bring you an interview with a candidate running for the 74th Assembly District seat. But first, we want listeners to know that WPR had organized a debate between the candidate's Democratic incumbent, Beth Myers of Bayfield, and Republican challenger Jeff Ball. That debate was set to take place last Friday, but due to illness, Representative Beth Myers was unable to take part. We had hoped to speak with her before the election about her stance on the issues, but life always has other plans, and we wish her a speedy recovery. That said, we hear next from Republican Jeff Ball, who was the mayor of Phillips from 2006 to 2012. 4 years prior to that, he served on the Phillips City Council. Jeff Ball spoke with me over the phone on Friday about why he's running and his stance on issues like economic development, transportation funding, and more.
I was born in Ogama, graduated from Prentice High School, and went off to college and became a computer programmer. So I graduated and then got a job at BW Paper Systems as a computer programmer. I've been here for 24 years. While living in Phillips, I was the mayor of Phillips and city council. So I got involved in politics and worked on improving the Phillips area. And then I continued that on the board of directors for the chamber, where I even was the president for 3 years. And so I wanted to expand that and being a voice for the public. I wanted to work on improving things for northern Wisconsin, like I feel I did in Phillips.
Okay. And what would be your top priorities if elected?
My top priorities are jobs and worker training, expanding marketing for tourism, and expanding broadband access to the rural areas.
Okay. And so what do you feel that you bring to the table that may be lacking in your opponent?
I don't want to say too many bad things about my opponent, but I feel that I would be one to work hard and be a voice for everyone in the district.
Okay. Well, let me ask you some specific questions then about the issues. You mentioned jobs and worker training would be some of your top priorities. I guess with the economy in northern Wisconsin, what do you feel can be done to help the district's economy grow or thrive?
Well, there are some good businesses already here who are struggling for workers. So there are programs out there now that I think we could expand on that would get the current citizens of the area the right skills that they need for the current jobs. And then I think there's also the need for additional jobs that we could try and draw more business to the area. So I think just promoting the northern Wisconsin, that it's a great place to live and to work and play, I think would be helping the economy.
So are you thinking about bringing in big businesses or encouraging small business development? What does that look like to you?
I think both. I think there's the whole gamut. There's, they all have their benefits to the area. So I think we want a mix of small businesses and large businesses.
Okay. Well, aside from the economy and jobs, then, healthcare is also a top concern among people living in the district. We've seen concerns over reimbursement rates for nursing homes and personal care workers and a shortage of that because of wages not keeping pace. And then we've also seen issues with substance abuse in the area, particularly methamphetamine, that has put stresses on county resources and funding. I guess I'm wondering what you feel could be done at the state level or what you would push for if elected to address some of the issues that we're seeing with healthcare in the region.
Okay. Well, for the shortage of nurses, I guess I would say that goes to just the development of promoting the area to bring more people to the area and to the jobs. So getting the training available to the nurses. And I know that's kind of been a feeding cycle. I know I had a family member who was a CNA and she left the field because of there was the lack of people in the field. So she ended up being overworked and just ended up having to leave the field. So I guess just promoting people to that workforce would be on that area. On the reimbursements for Medicaid and that, I can feel that. That affects me personally because the low reimbursement rates have an impact on those who have employer-funded health insurance. So I definitely think we need to address that. And I'd like to see the rates, reimbursement rates go up. But I think another way to address that is to try and look at what is the source. Is it the fact that they're not reimbursing enough, or is it that just that the healthcare costs are going up? And so one of my ideas for, I think something that we should look at for addressing the healthcare costs is the fact that when people go in for a visit, they don't really know how much they're going to be paying. And I think if we look at the way the free market addresses costs or pricing, is something that would be very beneficial to this. And the example I would use is laser eye surgery. Laser eye surgery is not something that's covered typically by health insurance, and so it is something that people can shop around and they have to pay out of pocket, and therefore they get the price of that before they even have the procedure. And because of that, we've seen laser eye surgery prices go down. So I think if we had applied those principles to the healthcare industry, where people can go in. You can go into the shop and get pricing for an oil change or tires. Not to pick on, I'm not picking on the auto industry, but you can't go in and get a price for your doctor's visit. I think there was a third question in there, but I forget what.
Yeah, I was asking you about substance abuse in the region and how it's impacted county resources and staff. Like, for instance, Ashland County, we've seen them go to a referendum in the last year asking to cede the levy by $1 million to pay for needs with their human services department and also in law enforcement.
Okay, yes. So I think there's two areas to look at for this. One is that part of the cause of the drug epidemic is potentially started with the overprescription of some of those drugs. So I know there's been efforts already underway to prevent overprescribing medicines, but I think that there's I know when I've had, I know people who have had procedures and they get the painkillers and they usually need them for a few days or a week and they get a 30-day supply. So I think that's something that should be looked at is the overprescription. And then I believe the other area is that is find an environment that would alleviate the negative thoughts that people need to go to drugs to feel to have a happy life. And I think part of that would be is by having a fulfilling job. And so I think going back to the promoting of getting people a job through economic development and worker training, I think would have an impact on the drug epidemic.
What about for people who may have work, but they feel that the work is not enough to make a living, or it's not a living wage that they're earning, or that they may also struggle with other things like transportation or housing?
That's a difficult situation. I know it'd be difficult for them to go to school, you know, working a job and get the education. So I think we need to find ways to work with their current employers so that they can have the ability to better themselves, whether it's to better themselves and advance in their current with their current employer, or to better themselves to move on to another employer in a field that they make a better wage.
Okay. Well, in the response area of some of the issues that we've seen with substance abuse, I'm thinking like you were saying, the medical services that may be taxed because of what we're seeing. You know, one thing that is often mentioned is a need for treatment centers. I guess I'm wondering, do you feel this is a problem that we can arrest our way out of, or do you think we need more treatment services in the region to deal with some of the substance abuse that we're seeing?
Well, I mean, we need to provide whatever services people need to kick the drug habit. And I guess I'm not exactly how many treatment centers we have and how that, but I would be definitely open to including or adding more treatment centers if there is a lack of enough centers for the people who seek treatment.
Okay. Well, I guess aside from healthcare, I wanted to ask you about transportation, because that's been an issue, especially in northern Wisconsin, with flooding that we've seen in this past year and also in 2016. And then just generally, you know, the state of town and county roads, a number of them have expressed that they've had to resort to borrowing in order to pay for repairs. So I'm wondering, you know, there's been a lot of talk at the state level about whether or not we should raise fees or institute a gas tax to pay for transportation needs. Would you support that, or are there other ways that you'd like to go about funding transportation needs in northern Wisconsin?
Well, I'm currently not in favor of increasing the gas tax. Well, I guess not a huge increase. I know it's been held steady for quite a while. So I think, you know, there might be room for a small increase. But for the most part, I think people usually say taxes are too high. So I think we need to find other ways. And instead of increasing the income, one of my thoughts, ideas is to look at decreasing the expenses. And in that area, I think we could look at eliminating waste. I know from personal experience here where I work, we do lean manufacturing and find ways of getting more done with spending less. And even after several years of that process, we're still finding ways to eliminate waste. And so I think that that's something that should be looked at for not just, like, you know, road projects, but, you know, government projects in general. I recall when I was the mayor of Phillips and we did some building projects. And when the public was hearing what, you know, the cost of some of these buildings were going to be, that, you know, they were just amazed at the price. And so I think to go that for some, you know, that government projects have a higher rate. And I think if we look at making them more efficient, we can eliminate the waste and lower the cost of these projects and get more done with the tax money we're already receiving.
So as far as that applies to, I guess, county funding, I mean, how would you go about reducing expenses related to transportation?
Well, I mean, I guess that you know, the projects, you know, it's government bidding jobs are, I guess my point was, is that the government bidding jobs are higher than typical projects. And I think that if we could find ways to make them more efficient so that they don't need to be overpriced, that would help not just, you know, the state, but also the towns and counties.
Like trying to reduce costs with purchasing materials or?
Well, just the overall project, yeah. I mean, the materials, you know, usually materials and labor, I guess, are your two big parts of that.
Okay. Well, aside from transportation, you know, infrastructure is also a big issue here in northern Wisconsin, specifically related to broadband. I know there's been a lot of expansion of broadband internet service in the last 10 years. What do you want to see related to, you know, digital technology here in northern Wisconsin and having access to that?
Yeah, you're right. I mean, there has been good access. You know, access has been getting better, and it's unfortunately it's not up to par to the big cities, and that's one of the reasons why we struggle with drawing people up here. So I think, you know, providing the speeds that they can see in the bigger towns, and I don't necessarily think that that's going to be done solely by running lines, because there's rural areas that it's, you know, it doesn't make sense to run a line for, but I think, you know, there's wireless methods of transmission that I think would be more applicable to the rural Wisconsin. But yeah, I think the technology is going to be able to help in so many different ways. I mean, it can help with, you know, economic development. It can help with the tourism and drawing people to northern Wisconsin. It can help with healthcare and telemedicine. I know that's talking that they're looking at expanding telemedicine, and, you know, saving money by the fact that, you know, you don't have to drive even the distances to go to a doctor. So I think providing that internet service is critical, and I think we need to be able to make it so that it's fast enough for all of these applications.
I'll just move on then to natural resources. You know, Northern Wisconsin prides itself with its hunting heritage and the wild deer herd. And this year we saw concerns over chronic wasting disease after a deer farm had deer that were transported from another farm in southern Wisconsin that had tested positive for the disease, which is deadly for deer, and raised concerns about transmitting it to the wild deer herd. You know, we've seen an emergency rule put in place by the state to require double fencing of deer farms. I guess I'm wondering if you support that proposal and what you think needs to happen as far as addressing chronic wasting disease, because there's been some disagreement at the state level as to whether we should handle this through the rulemaking process or in the legislature.
Well, So, double fencing, I guess seems to make sense to prevent, just common sense procedures of preventing those that might be affected with CWD of interfacing and connecting with outside deer herds. I think the handling this should be something that's done with. I want to lean towards the legislature. I mean, I guess I'm concerned about, the policies and being done by the rules from the bureaucracy versus actually those that were elected by the people to represent them. I think it would be a fair, those choices would be based on what the people are wanting if it's done by the legislature.
Okay, so you would rather see it taken care of by lawmakers rather than through the rulemaking process?
Yeah.
Okay. I guess aside from deer farming and concerns over chronic wasting disease, we've also, in recent years seen proposals come up in the area related to concentrated animal feeding operations and also a proposal to mine in Ashland and Iron counties. There's been a lot of debate and discussion over whether or not such projects are appropriate for that area as far as being so close to Lake Superior or located within wetlands. I guess I'm just wondering, what's your take on proposals like that, and how should that be handled at a state and local level?
Okay. Well, I mean, the concentrated feeding, to me, does present a unnatural issue. Deer don't normally congregate. They're small herds, but the feeding brings them more together at one spot, which increases the likelihood of spreading chronic wasting disease. So I think that's something that should seriously be looked at.
I'm sorry, Jeff. Let me just clarify. I kind of jumped from topic to topic there. What I was talking about related to concentrated animal feeding operations are the large-scale farms that we've seen proposed in some areas of the state, and one in particular that was proposed a couple of years ago or several years ago now in Bayfield County. So large-scale farming is what I was referring to.
Oh, that's right. Okay. I'd like to see the deer herds be natural and wild. So I guess I'm not sure what the benefits of the large farming are, other than increasing the herd. But I guess I would lean more towards the natural wild deer.
No, I'm sorry. It would be separate from deer farming. The large-scale farming operations that I'm talking about are the dairy farms that have grown to 1,000 animal units or more, that have created concerns among some residents. and related to water quality, for one, as it relates to manure storage in these operations and a number of other issues. I guess I was just wondering to get your take on, you know, your perspective on large-scale farms or dairy farms throughout the state, and then also proposals to potentially mine in northern Wisconsin, especially since we've seen changes to the law related to sulfide mining in the last year.
Okay. I'm sorry. I misunderstood that question. Okay. Large farms, yeah. I guess my, I grew up in Ogama, the way there were, family farms. And unfortunately, we're seeing a progression away from that. It's unfortunate that, plausible for them to make a living on a small farm. So it seems to be that the best way for these farmers to make it is to go with large farms. And I think there are ways to do this that are safe. Permitting process. I know I was at county board meeting, I think it was the Ashland County Board meeting, where they were looking at their permitting process and making sure that they would be able to monitor these large farms to prevent any issues if those were to arise. And so I think, the local governments can, with their permitting process, monitor these. They're the best ones. They're the local, they have the best control. They have the best access to the information of what's going on at these farms. They live right next to them. So I think that's where the permitting process for these farms should be handled. And as for mining, I think it can be done safely. I know there's environmental concerns, but I guess most of the time I would say that these mines can be done without major damage to the environment. There are rules in place, and if they break these rules, they should definitely be held accountable for them. But I think that with those rules in place, the mining can be done safely and have no impact or very little impact on the environment.
I think we have a couple of minutes left here, Jeff. I guess I just wanted to ask you about law enforcement and mental health issues. In the last year, we've seen a number of officer-involved shootings in northern Wisconsin. And I'm just wondering if you think that there is anything more that needs to be done at the state level that we could either do to support law enforcement or work with them to de-escalate potential violence and also those that they come into contact with.
Well, I guess I can't say I'm familiar with all the situations of the shootings, but I guess the best way for the state is to make sure and continue to provide training for the officers on how to spot these situations and to try and handle them without lethal force. I think that's the biggest area that we can look at for helping law enforcement.
And as far as, I guess one other issue in the northern Wisconsin region has been a number of attacks on livestock or dogs by wolves, and people have a lot of mixed feelings about that. We have three tribes in your district who, some of whom have wolf protection areas around their reservations because they view the wolf as a brother and do not want to see the wolf harmed. And currently it is listed as a federally endangered species. But there have been efforts at the state and federal level to delist the wolf and return management to the states. Or I guess I'm just wondering, would you seek to return management to the states, or do you think that federal protections for the wolf are necessary?
I think the wolf population has been increasing. There's been more spines, and I I would agree with, I'm one for local control. So I think in this case, between the state government and federal government, I would favor the state government of monitoring and the wolf population.
Is there anything else that I haven't asked you, Jeff, that you would like people to know about you as they're heading to the polls on Tuesday?
I guess just that I in my career as both government and work here, I've worked hard to make things better. And I guess I would just want to be a voice for everybody in Madison.
Well, I really appreciate you taking the time to speak with me and share your views on a variety of issues. Thank you very much, Jeff Ball.
Thank you for providing the opportunity.
Again, you were just listening to an interview with Republican challenger Jeff Ball, who is running against Democrat Beth Myers in the 74th district race. Again, we attempted to interview both candidates on the issues, but Representative Beth Myers was unable to take part due to illness. You can hear this interview again online at wpr.org/superior. I'm Danielle Kading, and you've been listening to special election coverage on Wisconsin Public Radio. We will have election coverage tomorrow night after the polls close here on Wisconsin Public Radio, and you can tune in for local updates on the 7th Congressional District race, the 74th Assembly District race, and the 25th Senate District race. I'm Danielle Kading. We hope to have you with us again tomorrow night. Until then, have a great rest of your day.